Wait, wait, stop, that's the one. Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being. To be true to yourself and be honest with others. No need to be politically correct. That's out the window with 2020. Here, we tell the raw, uncensored story, your story. And tell the truth as you see it. Make sure you live your fulfilled life without permission or apologies. So, if you have a juicy, interesting, raw, unapologetic story, and inspiring, please make sure to contact me at zenten21@gmail.com. It is zenten21@gmail.com. Or you can find me on most social media platforms. You know it. The IG, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, OnlyFans. I mean, not really. But yes, OnlyFans. Just kidding. Not. As you may guessed it, my name is Zen, and welcome to the show. And I do have walls, and I keep people not necessarily out. It's just like they need to be, like a better word, worthy. Not worthy as in a sense where you're bad and you're bad in judging them. It's just like for someone to be, as I said, I take things very seriously. For someone to be in here, they need to be a certain way. And if they're not, and I do not judge them and say you're unworthy either. And I think eventually I'll have a better explanation because the word worthy can trigger.
It's not that they're unworthy as human beings, but it's right. Worthy of your trust and your emotional closeness specifically. Yeah.
Right. That, exactly. And so I'm not sure if part of it is just because I do not have the experience with a lot of HWs that I've noticed who either got kicked out or they were Sean. I just left and I did not care. I woke up one day and something clicked and whatever else was there was the past and it was didn't matter, period. And moving forward, I just did not think because I was still in the area and I knew a lot of people. When I saw them preaching, when they saw me, I kept walking. I changed my number. I did not have fear. I did not give a like they say. So I do not have that sense of abandonment that way or being shunned. Even if they shunned me, I didn't care if they did, because I know my family thought that would work for them. And because I did not care, they're the ones who often came back to call me, to find me on Facebook and try to talk to me. But of course, trying to talk to me, I feel it was because they were preaching me. Also, learning in psychology, when it comes to either narcissism or other behaviors, how people will love bombing you. And then once you end, they say, okay, these are the rules. And then if you don't, and I'm going to abandon you. So knowing that, and talking to psychologists, knowing human nature, and maybe I do a lot of discernment and feeling energy. So if I feel something is not right through here or my gut, I will still talk to people in a superficial way, but I will not let them in my heart. And a lot of people want to be my friends
And recently, I would say like 2 months ago, I posted on my Facebook, if you want to chat, it needs to be business-wise. And that's not entirely true. It's because I have a lot of people going to my DM and they want to make friends and they want to chat. And I do not have the bandwidth or the heart to give them that superficiality anymore, because I am very, I've claimed my true self and I want to be truth and honest to myself and raw and be who I am finally. And I've noticed when I am that, people do not stay, or
the wrong people don't stay.
Right, right, exactly. The wrong people does stay. Well, the funny thing is, I still have some good people in my life, definitely. And I read a thing that says no one can be themselves 100%. If you are, then you most likely will not have people stay around. And I'm not sure if that's true or not. When my experience so far, I've noticed it's more true than not, because there are some things I have to be in the closet with. Not even big things like murder or being a liar, just like personal stuff. If I talk about it, even subliminally, when I post a little things about it, people get upset. Even those people who are close to me. So I'm thinking, oh, so if they know the whole truth, then they will they be around. And I've noticed one thing about me, because again, I take things seriously. I'm able to love people unconditionally, regardless what they do. I can, and I've learned the difference. I can still love you, even those friends that I let go. I do love them, but then they are not good for my being because I had that experience. So I think that's the difference, because some people will say they love you, and then when they get rid of you, that was a bad word I used, not the correct word. So when they get rid of you, they dislike you and they hate you and they write bad things and they gossip. And I do not do any of this stuff. And actually, when they talk to me, I often tell them how I appreciate them and how I love them, which is true, but I still keep that distance with them. And I've noticed that with the social skills from the start. And I'm not sure what, if part of it is me or part of it is growing up Jehovah's where I keep things at a distance to discern who is good for me. Because, you know, as a Jehovah's Witness, we discern not making worldly friends or even friends in the congregation. Are they good for us, etc.? So that part I need to figure out myself, but it's not a problem for me though.
Not everything we got taught was useless. Some of the things that we learned along the way are useful. They may have been used badly while we were in the organization, but it doesn't make it useless. I was just speaking with someone earlier on today about how when we leave, we might have decades worth of scriptures filling our heads. We might have all of these different, you know, skills, and okay, I can knock on people's doors if I want to and talk about arcane topics like religion. And we've got all of these things, and part of us wants to say, burn it with fire, get rid of it, get it out of here. And the fact is that unless you go through some seriously psychologically damaging processes, you can't delete the information from your mind. In fact, you can't delete the information from your mind. You can just scramble your ability to retrieve it. That's not a solution. That's not healing. That's damaging ourselves even more. The trick, and you think about it, shunning is not a healthy thing to do, especially not to someone you love. So why would you shun an aspect of yourself?
Right.
This is a part of our story. This is a place that we came from. So what we have to do then is to give ourselves the space to say, okay, I have these traits and these skills and these different behaviors. Which ones belong in my life from this point going forward, and which ones only belong in the past JW version of me? And doing it without malice or judgments or bitterness, and just accepting that these are different periods of time in our life, and during that time we had a different personality. And the word personality, when you talk about identity and what's me and what's the organization, in Jungian psychology, at least, Jungian, I think I said that wrong, the idea of the personality or the persona comes from the idea of the theatrical masks that they used to wear in the theater and in ancient Greece and whatnot. And that the persona is to act as if you are a person. And so we have many different personalities throughout our lives, or you could view it like a diamond where when you shine the light on a different side of it, a different facet, the pattern comes through differently. So just accepting that as time goes on, our identity will grow and evolve organically. And there are some things that we'll bring with us and some things that we'll discard, but we don't have to discard everything just because it comes from a time in our life that we no longer associate with.
That's a great point. And I'm glad that you mentioned that. I've noticed a lot in the groups where people, the thought, maybe they have, because they haven't healed yet or went through the process, the thought of Jehovah's Witness or things that they do, it's all burn it all, burn it all, burn it all. And I, for me personally, I do not agree with that. And I do not go through that, which I wanted to ask you. I ask mostly everyone is what were the assets of being Jehovah's Witness that you keep now that's an asset for you in your life?
Public speaking, for sure. Not that I've had much opportunity over lockdown and that, but I'm happy to walk into a room of however many hundreds of people and just deliver a speech off the cuff. That's no issue. And I would put that down to the experiences there. Also, the willingness to be a bit of a misfit, the willingness to stand out and to do what I believe is right. Because you think about it, we were raised to be, this is quite an ironic thing, isn't it? Uh-huh. We were raised to stand by our beliefs all the way up to the point of execution. If we're going to be thrown into a concentration camp and then threatened with death, we will stay true to what we believe to be right. And we had that conditioned into us. Mm-hmm. And that's, okay, that's kind of screwy and the way it was taught and, you know, growing up watching The Sound of Music and your parents saying, hey, that scene at the end where the Nazis are chasing the Von Trapp family, yeah, that might happen to us one day. It's not a great way to grow up feeling safe. But in terms of extracting the good, many of us, and in my case, certainly, I grew up comfortable with the idea that the whole world might be against me, but as long as I stay true to what I believe, then I'll come through okay. Yeah. And even so now my beliefs have been upgraded and I've seen the organization now as more of a training wheels than the real thing. And but the inner strength to say, no, I'm going to do what I feel is right. Well, that's what's empowering me to do this activism work, because I look and I know that this paints a target on my back. I know that certain family members and perhaps friends who would have spoken to me, now they won't have anything to do with me. And it's that the strength to say, well, I'm going to do what I believe to be right, and you can think what you like, but that's on you. That's a skill, ironically, that I learned in the Witnesses that's now helping me to support people in leaving it.
Definitely, 100% same here. And ironically, when I was talking to my parents, and in the beginning, the elders wanted to talk, et cetera, I was using all the skills they gave me for my well-being. And this is why other people's Jehovah's Witnesses stories that are very hard to read and hard for them, I cannot relate. And I guess we all process things differently. As a quote or meme says, life is and how you process it is basically your own way. Like everyone processes differently. And I have siblings who process that differently for them. And for them, they got kicked out the house and they got kicked out of the religion. So I do understand maybe they have a big trauma, but I do not have religious trauma. And mm-hmm. I'm very grateful for that. And because I don't know, I cannot feel how that's like. I do have other traumas, but not religious trauma. So tell us a bit about Love with Intelligence. Like, what is it and what do you do there?
So Love with Intelligence is a dating and relationship company that focuses a lot on behavioral profiling and also on recovering from narcissistic relationships and going on to build happy, healthy relationships. And so that was a business that my partner and I started, and we partnered with a guy called Chase Hughes. So he's a world leader in behavioral profiling. He got like $30 million worth of government investment to develop these people reading and influence tactics for the military. And these were really life or death scenarios where it's not like the worst thing that's going to happen is you'll lose a sale. It's the worst thing that will happen is you'll get executed and videoed in the process. So they had to make sure that it was really top notch. So we looked at bringing those skills into the world of dating and relationships, because it's shocking statistics. It's like 1 in 4 men and 1 in 3 women go through a physically violent relationship by the time they're, I think it was 30. No. So these shocking, shocking statistics. And it was, well, how can people date safely without living in fear of that? And not only that, but how can you enjoy the process? So I don't personally have a huge amount to do with that. I was going to say that religion, to do with that business anymore, just because I'm focusing so much on the XJW work. But that's still going strong. And Lily's doing, it's a Lily Walford, WALRFORD. And she's putting together a ton of resources on recovering from narcissistic relationships, on how to spot those people, how to heal from those experiences and be safe to open up to the right kind of person in the future. So it's not from the pickup artist approach. There's some people may or may not know, but there's a whole school of research on pickup artistry, on how to seduce people. Specifically in the 90s and the early 2000s, a group of predominantly male psychology geeks got together and said, let's crack this seduction code thing, because you know what women are telling us they want and what they actually want just doesn't seem to be matching up. You know, I'm doing what she wants and now she's just telling me about this jackass that she's sleeping with and he's treating her like dirt. So what do I do?
Yeah.
So there was this whole field developed of guys learning how to pick up chicks, as it were. And a lot of it came down to, here's how to pretend like you're attractive for long enough to trick someone into being with you, at least for a night. And that's not a real good foundation for a healthy relationship. I'll tell you a weird story. There's a type of fish in many different oceans, and it's called It's the Cleaner Ross, WRASSE. And it's this little fish that goes into the mouth of this much bigger fish, and it goes in and it like swims in front of it and does this funny little dance. And then the big fish opens its mouth, the small fish goes inside, cleans around, and you know, gets rid of all the debris, has a nice meal, and the big thing gets its mouth cleaned. So a good little partnership. There's another type of fish called the saber-tooth bloody, and what the saber-tooth bloody does is about the same size as the small fish, and it's a mimic. So it swims in front of the big fish, mimics the dance of the nice fish, then goes inside, eats the tongue, eats the gills, eats all of this stuff, and then the big fish eventually dies as a result. So many of these different schools of seduction and influence and sales and everything else, they're like that saber-tooth bloody. It's here's how to pretend like you're going to be a good thing for this person's life.
Yeah.
And that's not ideal, I don't think. So Love with Intelligence, and in fact, anything that I'm involved with too, is very much focused on how can you create these healthy relationships where you can just genuinely be yourself and create beneficial, co-creative, cooperative relationships that work for all parties.
Let me know what your thought is on this. So part of the reason I've been growing a lot in 2020 as well is I believe strongly it was a narcissist relationship. And they did all this stuff. And of course, I give them credit. But from what I read, they say, you go through things and with your willingness and being able, willing to realize something, you did it yourself. But I have to give people credit, especially when it's something good that happened for me. And I understand a lot of people like to give credit as in blames. They say that person did this to me that I like to stay away from. But if that person did this to me in a good way, I still give them credit even when they say you did it yourself and it's not them. So I was in a relationship that was narcissist and the saber-toothed fish kind of situation. And I love him more because of it. And I'm very grateful for that experience and what I've was able to see about myself and see about who I attract and let's stay in my house, that too, in my life. And I'm a person that I go through life. I don't say roll me or life happened to me. I say life happened for me and people go in my life as in a way as a servant to help me in my growth. And what happened in that relationship or what he did to me was very painful. And I was depressed for a whole year. And that's another topic. I believe that depression or stress is self, like you make it up yourself. And at least in my situation, that was the case. Because I decided to stay depressed because it was bad, but it was this drug, dopamine thing. It felt good to feel bad in the rut. But then I knew I needed to get out of it. And I never been addicted to any drug besides sugar, but it felt like so much better. Yeah, I was. And so I discovered that I had the abandonment issue, which was a big revelation for me and how I deal with that. And I discovered why I keep people at arm's length and why I build walls. And when I let people in, I let in not necessarily the bad boys because I can see with the red flags and how people behave with their nonverbals. But I don't think I ever been in a relationship with a narcissist before. And I was very confused. And then until I learned about it. And another thing that I'm very proud of myself that happened is I never guilt them. I never shame them. And I never judge them. And because I know they have abandonment issues of they have to reject me first kind of a thing, I make sure that I never rejected them. And that's part of the codependency too, to basically taking care of them. But when I did that, it felt good. It did not feel with my friends or a stranger, like in a bad, or I'm having the short end of the stick. And that time I was really able to apply empathy, which I think is challenging. I like to call things hard, but I think having empathy could be hard. At least it was for me. I had to apply empathy, compassion, and kindness, and basically have unconditional love, saying, hey, I love you and I know you're going through all this stuff and we're honest with each other and he was going through all this stuff and I saw it and I knew it. And I've gone through my own things that came up through a relationship. And in my age now, I'm not saying it would never happen, but I'm grateful it did happen through this person. Mm-hmm. So because of that, because I was ready and willing, I don't see him as a bad person. I believe that we all serve some of each other and everyone have a purpose in our lives, when, you know, the quote, when they say a season of forever, etc. So he was passing through my life and he was able to be a use for me to get whatever I needed to get. So I love him for it. And I'm very grateful for it, although it was painful. And as I say, growing pains and growth is painful. So I wanted to get your thoughts about that, because as you mentioned with the love, get the right name, love with intelligence and narcissism. And it's very interesting because I talk to my friends who've gone through relationships where they get beat up or manipulated. Terrible, terrible, terrible. And this relationship that I had was quick and short. And I think because I don't have too much other traumas that keeps me staying, because I was able to also have boundaries. And I think that's why it did not last that long. And I tell my friends how I'm grateful and I'm happy for the growth. They get upset for me and they say, no, this is not right. And I went through this, and they're still battling for years afterwards, and they still think that person was bad. But my reaction toward it was different. So I feel all like, am I confused or what? What do you think?
Well, the difference is, if you were saying, oh, hey, they treated me badly, but it was my fault and I deserved it and this and that, that would be unhealthy. I love the expression that if you dip your glasses in crap, even the roses will look brown. Perspective makes a huge difference. You're looking at things and looking at life through a very positive lens. And the questions that you're asking internally is, how is this situation for my benefit? What can I get from this? What can I learn from this? Not in a using kind of way or a manipulative way, but in a just genuine curiosity. And seeing, well, how can I make this a positive? And so because of that, then you're able to look at those things and see, well, here's a big pile of like muck, but there's the gold gem in it. So I'll get that. You don't get gold gems, like a gold nugget, I should say. There's a gold nugget. I'll take that gold nugget out and I'll just kind of leave that big pile of muck over there. And thank you very much. So yeah, I'd say that's a positive mindset to be in. I think where people sometimes struggle is that if they are deeply traumatized or if they're hurting from many unresolved things from the past, then if they try and force themselves to be positive before they're ready, then what that becomes is like having a crack in a wall and then wallpapering over it and saying, look, see, the wall's just fine. You can't see a crack, can you? Look, lovely white, lovely wallpaper. It's not going to work. So sometimes, yes, we need to go on a healing journey to reach that point of forgiveness and to reach that point of peace and then even being grateful. So it's a perfectly fine point to be at. But also, if someone's not ready to just teleport there straight away, then there may be things that they need to work through. And people don't like the idea. I know sometimes in the past, I used to help people get rid of phobias. It's really simple, truth be told. But so someone can come, they've had a phobia of spiders for their entire lives. And we can get rid of that quite quickly. But there's this fear of, well, I don't want to like spiders because I have a phobia of spiders, right? I don't want to like spiders. What are you going to do to me? And so they don't want to let go of that. And the truth is, well, you're not going to love spiders. You're not going to like them. They're just going to stop having that irrational control over you. And so with these harmful, toxic, abusive experiences, sometimes people are like, well, I don't want to think that's okay. I don't want to think that it was okay for me to go through that experience. And fair enough. But that's not the point. The point is more getting to a place of internal peace so that you're no longer in a state of submission to that person. Yes. Because if you can just think of that person and then you feel awful, guess what? They're off living their life happy as Larry, not even thinking about you. And you just thinking of them, that they're making you feel bad. And in feeling bad, that's not just a thought, that's biochemically changing you for the worse. And so you're living in a state of submission to someone who is not worthy of that submission. And that's why healing and letting go and forgiveness is important.
Right. That's great. So how can someone listening to this find you and get the help they need?
Yeah, the best place to find me will be religionrehab.co.uk. Also on Facebook, I'm very active. The full name is Jonam Tullio, T-U-L-L-I-O, Ross. And I've got a Facebook group as well, the Religion Rehab Facebook group. And that's where we dive a little deeper into these areas of psychology and how we went through these various experiences and specifically how we can heal from them as well. So those are the best places to catch me or send me an email at jonam@religionrehab.co.uk as well.
Definitely. And watching your videos that you post on Facebook is amazing stuff. And I love watching them. I even have a Mormon group that I even post that in the Mormon groups and people love it.
Oh, thank you.
Because as you mentioned, anyone can use it. It's not exclusively to Jehovah's Witness because if you come from a high control group, or I think even if you weren't religious, because it's a human relation kind of a thing and you could possibly apply it. Funny thing is, I love reading, especially audio, and I still listen to, I don't remember their names off the top of my head right now. I listen to high-profile religious people, the ones who are inspirational people. They talk about God, but they're not preaching. They're just inspiration saying, you can do it.
Yeah. Huh? Like Sadhguru and people like that.
Right. And I just apply it just like being an ex-Jehovah's Witness and still have things, principles that I still apply in my life right now, things that work in my life. And the rest that do not, I just don't apply it. And so I love watching these people and I just let the religion stay there and whatever helps for me. And listening to your podcast as well, I've noticed it's like the same, but I feel like your Facebook is more personal and the podcast as you're interviewing people is also at least good for me, whoever else can listen. It's you interviewing someone else that has an expertise in something and then basically unpacking the mind more, going more deeper and seeing things in a bigger picture. And as for the Facebook, at least for me personally, it's talking to someone personal and understanding them and being in their heart and feeling them. So yeah, so when we started talking and I definitely after I saw your stuff, I was like, we have to talk and more people have to know about you. And as I mentioned, I posted on my Mormon group, which I started last year because I had a lot of Mormons reaching out to me on Facebook because they couldn't go door to door. Right. And everything happened last year, 2020. So, so thank you so much again,
Jonam
Russ, for being here. Anything else you'd like to add before we go that I didn't ask?
There's something that would be potentially useful to people is something that I've literally only just released in the past couple of days. And that's a recovery report. You may have seen it. I did a video about it. And at before we start any of the hypnotherapy work, then before that, a big part of the process is getting super clear on where are you now? Where do you want to be in the future? And then reverse engineering that, like what are the opportunities? What are the strengths that you can capitalize on? What are the obstacles and the pitfalls you need to navigate around in order to heal like that? And also taking a stock of if and how specifically the religion has impacted you that you need to be aware of. So I've taken that part of the conversation because it's so powerful for people, even though it's just asking questions. It reveals so much about our own self that we can then see it objectively and see, great, I have a strategy now of what I'm going to do to make progress, to achieve my goals, and to heal from the various wrongs I've experienced going forward. So I've taken that and turned it into a report, into an assessment, where you can just go through it and answer these questions, and then you straight away get sent this personalized report. And this is the same kind of mid to long range strategy that I give my one-on-one clients. So I put that together as a free resource for people, just to help anyone who wants to not get a map where someone else is telling them what to do, but it's more getting a compass so you can navigate your own way in your own life. So that's on the website at religionrehab.co.uk/report. And I'll send you the link. So if you put it in the description or wherever, as a free resource, it's just there, it's free, it's available, and it's ready for people to I hope get a lot of help out of.
Yes, definitely. I saw it and I thought it was amazing. Brilliant. And that's a great thing. And so you heard it here today, everyone. So make sure to go to religionrehab.co.uk and reach out to Jonam Ross. Thank you again, Jonam, for being here. I appreciate you. All right, see you next time.
Cheers.